Season 2 of 1923 has ended, and it was a lot, right? You made it really clear that the show was imperfect. You know, it's funny because our official poll asking you to grade the finale came in around an A or B, but most of the nearly 500 comments were pretty critical. C at best, said Ehickey1202. Taylor's writing this season was terrible and lazy and in some respects formulated. At tasteofcountry.com, we made a list of 7 burning questions the show never answered. Things like, why did Spencer blame Donald Whitfield for killing Alex? Is Elizabeth still pregnant? And who the heck is John Dutton's grandfather? There was also this bombshell about Spencer having a baby with another woman that was just sort of lobbed right in our lap, wasn't it? Oh, by the way, Spencer got another girl pregnant too, so don't worry about her. Yeesh. Hey, it's Billy Dukes, and this podcast episode is a little bit different. It's quite a bit shorter as we're focused on just 3 unique reviews of 1923, plus your feedback. Understandably, a lot of people didn't like how it ended for Spencer and Alex. And yeah, we're going to talk some spoilers here, so as always, if you haven't watched, come back a little bit later. She should have kept her blank in Illinois and sent a damn letter, says the always pragmatic Leah Carr 6946. I mean, she should have at least taken the gas station lady's advice, right? Not everyone had an issue, though. I loved the finale, shouts at Miss Daniel SJD on YouTube. Every single moment of it, I screamed and laughed and cried. All made sense, and it makes me want the next installment. How about you? As a season, how does the show compare to A, other television shows, and B, other shows from the Yellowstone franchise? For the most part, the Dutton Rules podcast team has held back opinions, in part because we wanted to let the full season play out, and in part because we never want to sound anything less than objective. My co-host Addison Hager is here, as is Taste of Country's Sterling Whitaker, who's been our quiet wingman throughout this series. We all have unique perspectives, and I promise we'll have very different opinions. As always, this is a conversation, and you're encouraged to join us at staff@tasteofcountry.com. Sterling, Addison, how are you?
Hello, Billy. Doing great.
I'm like doing great. I'm enjoying the Nashville allergies.
Wonderful, isn't it? It's a wonderful time to be a Middle Tennessean.
It's beautiful. Specifically, my white car is now green. Love that.
Those who have listened to the podcast or seen these videos before know Addison and I host the Dutton Rules podcast. Sterling comes on at the end of each season, typically to give his grade for each episode and to kind of explain his thoughts. And the benefit is here we get 3 pretty different perspectives, I think. None of us have, like, ranching experience, so we can't really weigh in from there. Well, maybe Addison knows something we don't.
For those who are just listening to the audio, I gave Billy a look like, don't put me in that box. Just kidding. I don't. I wish.
Addison is also our farmer once a wife correspondent, so maybe she is going to lean into that ranching.
Twist my arm if anyone's listening. Sign me up.
All right, we'll each give our grades as well as a little bit of an explanation for how we got there. We're just talking season 2 today, but if you want to expand into season 1, of course, feel free. Sterling, you're up first. Take it away. Season 2, 1923. What says you?
What says I? I give season 2 of 1923 an A- overall. I thought it was really, really strong. I enjoyed the second season probably as much as the first overall for different reasons. And I thought they did a really good job bringing the stories home, although in some cases, you know, maybe not in the most believable way, but it was a lot of good, compelling storytelling and a lot of good character development.
How would you kind of compare this show to, like, just like a humdrum CBS Friday night procedural?
Significantly more cursing. For one thing.
And, a touch more sexual assault.
Yes, I would absolutely have to say that's so. Yeah. And as far as ups and downsides, the upside of this season for me was that It was different from season one because Spencer and Alex spent most of the year separated. And so it kind of gave you two different looks at what they're like together and what they'll go through to get back together, you know, which I thought was interesting. I thought they really developed Kara and Jacob this season. You know, that sweetness that's between them, it became more deeply rooted. And I think that brings a little bit of light to a show that has also a really dark side at times. So it balances it out, you know. But the downside, I mean, you're right. You know, the thing about the assaults, I think, was almost universally disliked. And that's why this didn't get an A, got an A minus, because that's really unnecessary, you know, and you could have shown the cruelty of that character without showing us all that.
Yeah. Did the slow pace of kind of, or the slow speed at which Alex and Spencer get to Montana, were you good with that? Did that bother you at all? Or were you able to kind of remain patient?
I thought at least you got to see something new each week. It's not like, it's not like they, you know, lingered on any one scenario too long. I was concerned, like a lot of people going into the finale, how do you wrap this up? Well, that's when they just pulled the old switcheroo and you realize they're within like 10 feet of each other when you thought they were miles apart, you know? And I thought that was a very clever way to resolve that.
Yeah. You make a pretty good point. Like even though it did take a long time, like they were always getting into something new, like Spencer and the mafia, Alex becoming a waitress for an episode and meeting new characters.
Right.
It wasn't just same old week to week. And a lot of different sets and scenes. You got to kind of see a whole portion of the America really in the 1920s, which was historically pretty accurate and really, I think, kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, Addison, you're up next. How did you feel about season two of 1923?
I'm going to have to give it a B+, which I think season one, if I remember correctly, I think I gave it an A. And why I feel pretty confident about my B+ is really up until episode seven, I feel like it drug more than season one did. We said it before, Billy, on our podcast multiple times of like, just get us to Bozeman. Like, it just felt like a lot of the episodes were drawn out. And then I didn't love how episode six and seven, six is where we lose Jack. Seven is where I loved seven. And that's why I'm giving it the B+. But it felt almost like, okay, up in the first through fifth episode, it's drawn out. Where I was a little bit of a snooze fest, and then it felt almost as if Taylor Sheridan was like, oh shoot, we have to get them there by episode seven. We have two more episodes. And then the two episodes felt rushed, where I feel we didn't really get, like we've talked about, Jack didn't get the homage that I feel like he deserved as a character. Some of the things just felt rushed, where it didn't feel like that was a need for those things to be rushed. Like, we could have spaced things out. It wasn't like the first through fifth episodes were packed. But something that I did, I mean, kind of to Sterling's point, I don't think the Donald Whitfield's really graphic scenes were at all necessary. You know, we've talked before of, okay, maybe one or two times, fine. But it got to a point where I just would really question Taylor's reasoning for that. Where it was just too much. If I'm having to fast forward through stuff, it's like, okay, and that's pretty much across the board. A lot of people have said just it's too much. But what I did really enjoy is the first season, we spend so much time with Alex and Spencer, and we see both of their personalities, and we see specific that Alex has a more fiery personality. She's going to stand up to Spencer. She's not someone who's just going to kind of lay by his feet and just say yes. But we see, I really loved the individualism that we get to see because she's not with Spencer this season. I've said it once, I said it twice, I will say it so many times. I think Julia Schlafer did a phenomenal job in the acting role. And I felt so many variations of pride and then immense sorrow for her. And I just feel like the story arc with her specifically, and that's why I give it the plus, B+ side of things, is I did love how much depth and just grit that we got to see with her. Spencer, I do agree. It was cool to see like him running with the mafia. Like, we entered into so many different aspects in the journey. Like, it wasn't just him walking a dirt road the whole time. But I don't really feel like I left season two knowing like a ton about Spencer on a deep level. Like, I left knowing so much about Alex, but Spencer, I'm like, yeah, you're hot. You can kill a lot of people. Great.
Yeah. And you're troubled.
That's
fair. Yeah. He's troubled. He has PTSD. I guess that's about his three main takeaways.
Yeah. So that's me.
Funny. Someone on YouTube did a tally. They tallied up all the kills, and it's like, you know, 4 for this person, 6 for this person, 44 kills for Stop. Spencer. That's what they said. They added up like how many. I don't remember them all. Maybe they encountered some of those war scenes too, where he was just taking people down. He is like the all-time Yellowstone franchise leader, if that's the case, in terms of how many. His body count is unbelievable.
Is that more than Tim's in 1883?
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think about how many people Tim killed. James Dutton killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
But 44 is a lot of people.
Yeah, like 44 that it is. We're double digits. We're high up there.
Yeah.
Addison, I think you and I are in agreement. Was Julia Schlafer, like, if one person wins an acting award from this show, would we give it to Julia Schlafer?
Hands Sterling, down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. She really was the breakout star of this show, and I really hope she gets... She showed some depth, I think, in season two. Like, season one was great. Mm-hmm. She was very good, but that whole other side to her that she brought to it in season two, that was what made it for me, for her.
Yes.
Well, and I think for her as well, it's like, okay, you have a Helen Mirren, you have a Harrison Ford, who you kind of know going into this what to expect. I mean, they are very much right. So well-seasoned actors, but with a Julia Schlafer, correct me if I'm wrong, this is her first major role, unless I'm missing something. And so it's like, you don't know what to expect. And I just feel like she was par for the course. She could hang with a Helen, with a Harrison. And I think that's why I really just gravitate towards, yeah, win an award, girl. You deserve it.
I agree.
You know, one thing that Taylor does really well, Taylor Sheridan, he writes each character a monologue throughout the series. And Aunt Kara had a few monologues. Uncle Jacob had at least one monologue. But everybody got these little monologue. Banner in episode 7 had a monologue talking to his wife. And those are always really compelling moments, like for that character, just actor to sort of step up.
Did Elizabeth have a monologue?
I think probably somewhere in there she did. It wasn't like necessarily like a moment where you just felt like proud of her character and who she was. It might have been a little whiny. Like that moment where she says she's going home. That was a moment.
Right.
Yeah. A monologue, I guess.
Right.
But she wasn't like a strong, principled character like some of those others. You know what I mean? She was a little too young, I think, to.
Yeah.
To really take that spotlight.
Yeah.
But she was good. The only actor I thought I didn't think did a great job was the woman who plays Lindy. And I kind of more blame the role than I do the actress.
Right.
Because it was limited role.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Why do you feel like she didn't do a good job? Like, what about her acting turned you off?
It's just over the top. It was just over the top, like evil. Like, Whitfield's evil was kind of believable, but Lindy's was like... almost like a caricature of what evil should look like to me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that might be a scripting issue and not a her issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The character is written in a really flawed way because we're supposed to believe that at first it was her turn to get hurt, and then that's supposed to have turned her that dark. I find that awfully hard to swallow.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk for a bit and then give my letter grade. So I'm going to flip the formula a little bit on you guys. I had said that after episode 5 or 6, I think it was, that if Donald Whitfield's perversions didn't sort of pay off in some sort of way, the show was going to lose a full letter grade for me. And they didn't pay off. You know, even if they had just left some of the more graphic events to our imagination, I think this show would have been much better for it. Yep. And as someone who's, I'm a creative. You know, I understand wanting to sort of reach to those edges of which was acceptable. And that tends to make makes original art, you know. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, Taylor Sheridan's been really successful doing that. But I think a creative kind of also needs to have a team of people willing to tell him that he's wrong. Or, mm-hmm. And Taylor either didn't have that team or he wasn't listening to him.
Right.
And neither one is a big problem, I think. But the biggest problem for me was writing. I thought the writing this season was a big problem. There just wasn't enough for all these characters to do to cover the 7 or 8 episodes. Jack and Elizabeth's love story, it really sort of floundered to the point. Even when he died, like Aunt Kara, she shoulder shrugged more or less when Jack died. The audience didn't really care, and it didn't really seem like the characters cared all that much either. Relative to Alex, a woman she had never met, who she was weeping for.
Right.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that.
I'd feel so gypped as Darren.
Some people
Mann.
Were pretty upset about Aunt Kara's sort of stoic response to Jack's death. I didn't think she was that cold, but it wasn't as emotional as I thought it would be.
Right.
Once again, his entire death. I mean, we talked about that of the episode that we find out that he died. We were saying, oh my gosh, that means probably this next episode is going to be so grief stricken.
Yeah.
We were just business to usual. Business as usual.
It wasn't. Yeah.
That was a bit strange, I don't even know if for sure.
He needed a funeral scene. And I don't know if that was his funeral scene or Alex's funeral scene at the end, but maybe both.
I thought it was a double. I assumed it was a double funeral for the two.
Yeah, just because the way that Elizabeth was crying or like tearing up, I assumed it was a double.
Right.
I'm with Sterling in that the pace through the first 5 episodes, it was a little slow, but it didn't offend me. I was here for that long, slow squeeze for a great payoff. And I guess on the surface, we got a pretty good payoff. Spencer came in gun blazing. That was good. The good guys won. It was an epic tearjerker before the credits. The bad guy redeems himself. The family legacy is secure. You know, all those sort of things. These are like the hallmarks of like a great show or a great movie. But here's the big thing. I mean, this is a show that asks us to notice the little things and all the little details. Elsa, Spencer has Elsa's knife. Spencer's mom and wife both died the same way. The battalion that Spencer refers to, the Lost Battalion, that's super real and interesting. Then they kind of ask us to overlook a lot of really big sort of details, a lot of big things. The way Spencer and Alex reunited was, it was absurd, you know? The train just happens to come by her car.
I mean, and she just happened to stop right by the train track. Let's not forget that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a struggle. Alex, I swear she was 4 months pregnant at Ellis Island, but then she was 6 months pregnant in Bozeman. I know 2 months didn't pass, unless she just spent forever in Chicago.
Right.
How did the wolf get in the house? You know? Yeah.
That's a pretty good question. Yeah.
Those all kind of little things that, you know, Taylor Sheridan, he wrote 1883 in one season, and then I think he kind of had to hard pivot when they asked for a second season, so he invented 1923, and that was really good, the first season. I wonder if that same sort of thing happened, where they're like, hey, we want another season. He's like, oh, I don't really have another season in me, but I will stretch out 3 or 4 episodes to cover another 7 or 8 episodes and give the people that. And you throw in the strike, and he's got all these other things. Yeah, for all this, I'm going to give season 2 of 1923 a C. And I think it ended up being really middle of the pack among all the Yellowstone franchise shows. If someone were to ask, I'd say watch season 1, read recaps or watch recap videos of season 2, and that'd probably be the best way to spend your time. Acting was good, the writing was not. And that kind of met in the middle, I guess. Questions, comments, concerns?
No, go for it, Sterling. I'm pondering life over here.
There's one storyline we haven't talked about that also didn't quite, it resolved, but it didn't resolve in a way that I thought made a whole lot of sense, which was Teyona.
Yeah. Yes.
She's just like gets on a horse and randomly rides for California, and it leaves a lot of... Unless they're going to have another show that focuses on her or something in the future, it leaves a big, giant, open question about how did she end up, you know, out at the Broken Rock, and or did she, or how does that happen?
I went back and did a little more research into what Thomas Rainwater actually says about his heritage. And he actually, this is a detail I had forgotten about. He was adopted. And throughout his childhood, he was told he was Mexican, but not necessarily that he was from Mexico. I had it in my head that he was raised in Mexico to believe he was Mexican, but that's not the case. He was adopted and told he was Mexican, and then he learns who his birth mother is. So there's obviously something goes wrong where somewhere along the way, either Teona's child or has to give up a baby for some sort of reason. But her going to California doesn't necessarily disrupt what we know about Thomas Rainwater coming to the reservation. I'm not sure he ever lived there or she ever lived there.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I liked that storyline okay. I would have liked a little bit more of a stronger conclusion on that, but I thought it was fine. I liked Mammy Fawcett a lot. I'd watch a show with her in it. She was cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. Maybe they're going to work that into another season of what, Lawmen or whatever that was, Bass Reeves. Maybe they'll give her a spinoff.
Surely not. Sorry.
Lawmen, Mammy Fawcett.
Yeah.
It'd be better than Bass Reeves.
It sure would. Most things are, yeah.
No, I did like her character, though. And I did like that scene of Teona and her when they find Teona. And you can kind of tell that Mammy Fawcett is kind of grappling in her head of this girl's innocent, but she also killed. She's just like kind of having, she feels for her. And then at the same time, she's trying to do her job. And it's kind of this, you can see just in the way that she, her facials, it's like, she's definitely really conflicted internally. And I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So people, if you want to watch our recap video for the finale, there's a great interview with that Addison had a chance to talk to Amina Nieves and Michelle Randolph. And Amina is she's very engaging and super cool in that interview. Mm-hmm. Get a little glimpse of who the actor is behind the character. And she was really interesting previously, too. So I'd like to see her pop up in another role or two as well in the Taylor Sheridan universe.
Yeah, she's good.
We don't ask for this often, but rate and review and tap follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. Another Dutton Rules podcast episode is coming very soon. Addison Hager, Sterling Whitaker, and myself, Billy Dukes, wrote this podcast episode. It was produced by me with help from Addison and Brad Hanford. Thank you for listening.